Well, good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of El Paso Primetime. I'm Richard Dayoub, President and CEO of the Greater El Paso Chamber of Commerce. And today's guest with us is another Richard of much higher visibility in the community these days, Dr. Richard Lang, who is the president of the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Paul L. Foster School of Medicine. Is that all on one business card?
That's on one. And the only reason I'm a higher visibility is because I'm 6'4", Richard. That's it.
It's great to have you on the show, Dr. Lang. Thank you for doing this with us. And so why don't you begin by telling us what's new at the medical school?
Well, first of all, allow me to thank you for participating in this conversation. Today has been a really exciting day because we have the first year medical students starting today. So I was able to give their inaugural lecture or their inaugural welcoming at 8:30 this morning. And you can't imagine what it's like to look at 108 both energetic and excited and somewhat scared students all at the same time. So it's been an exciting day.
So for the benefit of our audience, we need to remind them this is a recorded show. So today is actually June 29th. And so when this airs sometime, I think, in early August, this class will have been seated for several weeks.
They'll be much more knowledgeable in a couple of months.
So I just wanted to give that clarification to our audience. But this is incredible, and I'm glad you brought this up as our first point of conversation, because this is something very special to our community. I don't know of anyone, I've certainly not have met anyone in our community who has not been an avid supporter of the medical school, and in their deep gratitude to Paul Foster, specifically the namesake of the school, for his generosity, which helped to kick this off. But we go back, well, long before I was at the Chamber. I was a volunteer in the late 90s, I think. And we had a senator, State Senator Elliot Shapley, who's still actively involved in our community. We had Dr. De La Rosa, who was, you know, still at the system at the time, and a host of other community leaders. I still have pictures somewhere in my office of about, I don't know, 100 or so of us at the Austin Club in Austin, Texas, during the legislature, where we held an El Paso Days in Austin event. And our number one priority, had been for years, was the medical school. So all of our elected delegation at the time were there, led by Senator Shapley. All of our business sector were there, and we were all wearing white coats. And most of us were lent stethoscopes as well to kind of emphasize the point. Some of the clowns got around to wearing surgical masks and whatnot, but we had something like 400 people, all of them in some way directly related to the legislators who they work in their offices, their staffers, in many cases the legislators themselves, pushing for this initiative. So it's been a dream for the community for a good 20 years, but you were telling me something before we went on the air. This class, because we grew the class, right? Explain that to everyone, please.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the community involvement, because the medical school would not be here without what you all did and have done for the last 20 years, as a matter of fact. You know, it has been a regional campus for about 40 years, and that is the medical students in Lubbock would spend their first 2 years in the classroom in Lubbock. And then they would go out and spend their third and fourth years either in Abilene or Amarillo, some in Lubbock, but at least half the class would be here in El Paso. And what became clear is we're a city that's three times bigger than Lubbock. Lubbock's 5.5 hours away, and you deserved a medical center and first-class medical care. And the health care needs here on the border are very different than they are in Lubbock. And because of the community support, the legislators could not say no to putting a medical school here. So in 2009, with everybody's advocacy and what you all did down in Austin and the generous gift from Paul L. Foster of over $50 million, the medical school got off the ground. So the first class in 2009 admitted 40 students, and then it grew to 60 students the next year and 80 students, and the final class size being 100 students per year. So now for all 4 years, we have about 400 students total in the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine. Now, fast forward 2 years after that, in 2011, because of a generous gift from the Hunt family, we started the nursing school, the Gail Grieve Hunt Nursing School. And those two schools allowed the legislature to grant us the status of being a health science center. You can't do it with just one school. You have to have at least two. So in 2013, we became an independent health science center, only one of two in the Texas Tech system. And by the way, this past year, we've added a graduate school, independent graduate school as well. So what you all, the vision that you had is responsible for what we see today and the health care that's being delivered here. And by the way, and what's going to happen over the next several years too.
Thank you. And actually, I was making notes as you were speaking because I was going to point out the fact that Woody and Gail Hunt have been so generous. As a result, we have the nursing school. But we have Robert Brown, Woody and Gail, Rick Francis, Harold Hahn, J.O. Stewart, who is generous enough to donate that land on which part of the medical school is now built. And just a few weeks ago, you and I were privileged to have attended a grand opening, a ribbon cutting, on sort of a connector, right, in the Cardwell Collaborative. Maybe you could touch on that a little bit and how that interfaces with the medical school.
Sure. And when you mention those names, I'm sure we could list dozens more of people that have played a prominent role as well. And so even though we may not acknowledge them by name, it's clear it took everybody to get this across the finish line. And wrapped around all that is what's called this Medical Center of Americas, to try to unify that whole area. It's about 440 acres. And on that current footprint, since not only the medical school and the graduate school and the nursing school, but University Medical Center, El Paso Children's Hospital, El Paso Psychiatric Center, and as you mentioned, the Cardwell Collaborative, that is the incubator, the building that was just open, meant to help us to accelerate science and commercialization as well. And so the whole concept that you all have of making this a hub, an innovation hub, and a biotech center is being realized.
Of all the things that our city government has done in recent memory that has been helpful in economic development and prosperity growth for our community, I single personally, now some may argue with me, but I believe that the commitment the city made through their impact fund of $3 million a year for 20 years to help fund the MCA will historically both be gone for different reasons and at different times. I think for many, many years to come, people will look back on this time frame and recognize the city for that commitment, because I don't think the MCA could have grown to the pace it's growing and will continue to grow without that seed money that will bring a return on investment to this community for decades to come.
And I came 2 years as the inaugural president. And you say, well, why would you come from a well-established institution, and I've been at several, to a brand-new institution that's so young and hasn't realized its full potential? And to a large extent, it was because of the vision of the leaders in the city. And what you describe, Richard, is absolutely true. The investment the city has made in that area is energizing that area, and for the next several decades, we'll reap the benefits. Now, there was some initial concern as we're building this building and will we be able to occupy it and will it be used to its full extent? And I can tell you, we have the entire second floor because we think being an anchor tenant there and fostering the science and innovation is really important. The whole building is completely occupied right now, and there are people knocking on the door trying to find out how they can get in. The next question is, when are we going to build the next building?
Isn't that great? And if I remember correctly, Emma Schwartz in her remarks made a statement that there is an additional piece of property, right, co-located with it. So they're prepared to do that second building, right?
Absolutely. And again, the value of being in that particular area is there is great opportunity to develop other buildings and other initiatives and other schools, as we'll talk about, because there's land there to do that. And that's incredibly insightful. I give J.O. Stewart kudos for donating the land that got us there and the city for having the recognition to develop the surrounding land as well.
I agree with you. And really, this goes back to visions of a number of people. I mentioned Senator Shapley, but there's a whole group of folks who shared that vision back in the 90s and recognized not only how important this could be to our community, but the physical location, the geographic location within our community supports our needs to grow in a very central area, versus being sort of cordoned off in one part of the community that's inaccessible to others. But that kind of segues into another part of the conversation I'd like to have with you, which is, and again, since this is recorded, we're talking about yesterday's board meeting at the chamber, but that was actually, as we're playing with the recording time, a month earlier, we had Nico get up in Tejeda, who is the new CEO of what will soon become the new teaching hospital on the west side with Tenet. Please talk about that.
Okay. And let me set the background, if you don't mind, Richard, of how important these teaching hospitals are. You obviously can't have medical education without having outstanding partners. And to date, University Medical Center and El Paso Children have been two of those outstanding partners. Because after a student has spent 4 years in medical school or a student has spent time in nursing school, but particularly for the medical students, you have an MD degree, but you can't actually be a physician until you go through residency. And currently at University Medical Center, we have 257 graduates of medical school that are doing their residency or advanced training called fellowship. And why that's important is over the last 15 to 20 years, we've graduated over 1,000 residents here in El Paso, 25% of whom stay and practice in El Paso. So where you train, you're more likely to practice. And this is a very underserved area. Now, because of the nuances of the budgeting, we can't increase the number of graduate medical education training or residencies at University Medical Center, El Paso Center. That's fixed. The federal government won't pay for any more slots. The only way to get new training is to have a brand new hospital that's never had a resident before. So when Tenet decided to build a brand new hospital out on the west side, the Trans Mountain facility, they contacted us about making it a teaching facility, a place where medical students can learn, and where we can add another 75 to 90 new resident slots. Again, when people train here, they're more likely to practice here. So this, for the Tenet Hospital system, is a brand new endeavor. They have previously bought other hospitals across the United States where there were established teaching institutions or teaching programs, but they've never started one from scratch. So this is a brand new endeavor for Tenet. And the reason they put it here is because this market is so important. And they're partnering with us because of what we bring to the table as well. So it is an exciting opportunity. I don't want to neglect our other training partners because they're all very important. But this is a new teaching opportunity that brings new training. It will bring new physicians to this area that weren't there. And with them, their spouses and their families as well. So there's a downstream trickle as well as to what all this offers.
You mentioned some of your other partners, teaching partners. Could you name some of them?
Certainly. We mentioned University Medical Center and El Paso Children's Hospital, where that have been our major teaching hospitals in the past. El Paso Psychiatric Center is where many of our psychiatry residents do their training and our students as well. We have some training at some of the HCA hospitals, so at Las Palmas and Del Sol. We're partnering with the VA. We have joint training programs in orthopedics and internal medicine and psychiatry and radiology as well. And we have clinics throughout the area as well. We partner with Paso del Norte. They've been extremely important.
The Health Foundation.
With the Health Foundation and with the Institute of Healthy Living. We're doing some stuff with UTEP as well. They have a pharmacy program, a doctoral pharmacy program. We'll be collaborating with them as well. So we look at this as an opportunity to everybody in the city that's interested in our mission, that is improving health care and education and opportunities here in partnering with them. And it's been a great city to do that.
Thank you. So you mentioned some of your partners, some of the new programs, but there's something on the horizon that hopefully you're comfortable talking about because I put you on the spot. We could always ask Dennis to delete, but we really want to hear about this. Would you please share this with our audience?
Not at all. And when this airs in August, I hope to have more information. But the next school on the horizon is a dental school. And why that's important, we talked about being an underserved area. It's an underserved area with regard to the physicians, total physicians, primary physicians, specialists. It's underserved with regard to nursing care, and it's particularly underserved with regard to what I'm going to call dental hygiene or oral care, oral health. And you say, well, what's so important about seeing a dentist? It's clear that besides missed days at work and missed opportunities of being at school and absenteeism and nutrition, that oral care is a prognostic or is a risk factor for developing things like diabetes and cancer in heart disease, inflammatory conditions, and even Alzheimer's as well. And the statistics would show that at least half the population of El Paso has never seen a dentist. They just don't have access to them. And so the dental school will allow us to train dentists in this area. We'll talk more about why we need one here and not other places. And again, when they train here, to practice here as well, and particularly to provide care to underserved populations.
So recognizing that there's still a lot of more detail to come from this and decisions that have to be made by the legislature before we move forward, I'd just be curious to know, what does that vision look like? Share that with our audience, please.
Well, there are currently three dental schools in the state of Texas, centered in San Antonio, Houston, and Dallas, and they graduate a total of 211 dentists per year. The number that come to El Paso are no more than one or two per year. Now, we have a growing population. We have about a third of our dentists that are nearing retirement age, and we already have a shortage of somewhere between 80 and 100 dentists currently, just general dentists. So our plans are to develop the dental school, hopefully with an innovative curriculum like we have at the medical school, and to do all the necessary accreditation, all the fundraising, all the legislative work that we need to do to admit the first class in 2020. And that is to interview them in 2019 and have feet on the ground, first students in the class in 2020. And we plan to do what we did with the medical school. We admitted first 40, then 60, then 80, then 100 students. We'll start with 20 students initially, then we'll go to 40 students for a year or two, and then hopefully finish at about 60 students per year.
So would that involve a physical structure, a new building, or would that be absorbed in some way within the existing infrastructure you have?
There's no place to absorb it right now. It will require new facilities, and those new facilities will mean new educational space for the students. It'll be offices for the dean and for the professors there, and also a clinic as well where they can practice dental care. So it is going to involve new facilities. So stay tuned. We're going to have to both raise some money for that and also go to the legislature and convince them of the importance of this.
Well, the chamber will certainly get behind this. I can assure you of that. But I'd like to ask you just, and this is a conversation, so hopefully I'm not putting any of my dentist friends on the spot, but what kind of conversations have you perhaps had with the local dental community, and what kind of support might you be getting from them?
That's a great question. This isn't a need that was recently identified. There was a study done in 2008 that identified this as a need, and that was based upon not only looking at the statistics but visiting also with the dentists here in the area. And the dentists were able to quantify the need and to identify it. The solution then was to establish a dental school here, but it hasn't been followed up. And then in 2012, the Higher Education Coordinating Board did a similar study. And they looked at statistics and also interviewed dentists here. And the dentist said, yes, there is a need. But at the time, the Higher Education Coordinating Board said, well, we already have three dental schools. Let's let them meet the need. What's clear is they haven't done that over the last 20 years. So what I would say is that the dentists here support the dental school. They see the need. They're interested in being a part of that solution and as being on part of the faculty as well. And the dentists we train now will be those that they incorporate as partners and also that they sell their dental practices to in the future.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I won't mention my personal dentist because I don't want to give them any free advertising. But I know that within their practice, both of the partners have children who are now involved with their practice. So either you transition in that fashion and or what you just described, you end up selling their practice to someone, oftentimes, unfortunately, and this is not unique to the dental community, it's my optometrist recently sold his practice to someone who will be committed to it, but you have to get lucky to find someone who is going to make themselves a local, because oftentimes they come from other cities, and then have that same level of commitment to the community. And so I think you're raising a very good point in terms of the need to have that pipeline of the future dentists. We complain about this within the medical community itself, right? We have an aging population. We have an aging population of physicians as well, many of whom are they just had enough. They want to retire, move on. And we're not backfilling quickly enough, are we not?
And that's true. And I want to use our experience at the other schools to highlight what we plan to do at the dental school. I mentioned there were 108 first-year medical students introduced today. 29 of them are from El Paso. When you look at our nursing school, 85 to 90% of our students are from El Paso. They're likely to stay in El Paso. I mean, they are loyal. They understand the culture. This is where they want to be. And the intention with the dental school is to have that same pipeline from El Paso high schools, from UTEP, other colleges around. They can train here and they can practice here. And that's why it's incredibly important.
So the same thing by extension applies to the dental community as well, right? If we have our dental school here and then we have more El Pasoans participating as future dentists, we're likely to retain them here, or at least more likely to do so.
Absolutely. One of the summer programs we have is we have high school students from around El Paso come in and spend several weeks with us doing simulation training and a little bit of basic research and learning what we're about. And the first day they're there, I ask them, what do they want to be? And some want to be doctors, some want to be nurses, some want to be researchers, and some want to be dentists. They know that even in high school. We don't have the ability to offer them that training yet, but we will in 2020.
Well, I think that's just an incredible initiative. It's daring. It's progressive. It's also time for our community. So we certainly wish you all the best of luck in this endeavor. And we'll be shoulder to shoulder in Austin. Actually, I just saw the list of volunteers to help the chamber prepare for next year's legislative session, El Paso Days in Austin. And some of your staff are on that working committee helping us to prepare the legislative agenda and the fundraising, and then focus on these priorities in a very calculating way, a positive way of saying calculating. So we're just about out of time. We have another minute or two. Would you care to offer some closing thoughts to our listening audience?
Again, I just want to thank you for allowing me to come here. And again, I want to give kudos to the entire community. The medical center would not be here without the support of the entire community, the financial support, the legislative support, the support that we enjoy on a daily basis. And it is truly a gem. We are committed to excellence, excellence in education, and excellence in research, and excellence in clinical care, because that's what the community deserves. And I couldn't be in a better spot in the United States in a better community.
Well, thank you. There is something else that we share with each other besides a first name. That's about where the resemblance ends, right? You're taller than me, better looking, and have a full head of hair. But we have something else that we share, and that's our commitment to children and their education. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention your incredible partnership with the Chamber in one of our education initiatives, the Adventure for Your Future, which we do every January, late January. We work with 5th, 6th, and 7th grade students from across the community. I'd like to, first of all, thank you for that partnership, but explain to our listening audience a little bit about why you guys are involved with us, why you're so committed to it.
Right. This is our pipeline, and our commitment and our experience with students starts at elementary school, continues in medical school, in high school, and then even through college. So that, for example, over the last year, we touched over 6,000 students, not only in El Paso Independent School District, but in Socorro and Isleta and Canutillo as well. They need to see that a healthcare profession is within their reach. They need to know how to attain it. They need to know they can get it here in El Paso, no matter where they go to college, to come back here and obtain that training. So it's a great to partner with the Chamber in this endeavor.
Well, thank you. We really enjoy it. In fact, it's grown so much that we're trying to figure out how to get all of those students and their parents, because the parents come with them. That happens, as I said, at the end of January. We'll probably get you back on. We'll talk about it as we get to the fall to remind parents out there, because I know that one of our other partners in this endeavor who helped orchestrate the whole event on that day is our Medical Magnet School in Jefferson High School. They're just incredible. So I want to thank them as well for their support of this. I think we're just about out of time this afternoon. So I would, again, end the show with my usual cajoling, Dennis, right? This is KTEP, which is the representative at UTEP for National Public Radio, NPR. We all love NPR. We all love KTEP. I'm preaching to the choir because you're listening to us right now. But let me ask you, this is a rhetorical question since you can't answer me. Are you a member of KTEP? And if the answer is yes, thank you. If the answer, on the other hand, is not yet, what are you waiting for? You don't have to wait for our fall fundraising phone bank. You can begin now by simply calling 747-KTEP and making a pledge. They're happy to take your money, cash, credit card, or check, debit card, a pledge. I actually pay mine on my American Express every month. And so it automatically processes through, and I get mileage credits to go with it as well. So we want to encourage you to support this station. I made a joke a few weeks back that if we could get someone to write a check for $10,000 as a pledge, that Pat Petrosky would make a commitment to remove me from the air as an exchange thank you for that contribution. So we're going to wrap this up today. Again, Dr. Lang, thank you for your time today. Thank you for making the commitment to this community. And I hope you'll let us do whatever we can as a community to help you. One last question of you. Many of us have been blessed to have a tour of the medical school. If the average citizen listening today would like that opportunity, is that opportunity available? And if so, how?
Absolutely. Not only for individuals, but we have groups here in the city that come on and hold or host events on our campus. We'd love for you to do that. It is a community gem, and it belongs to the community. All they have to do is email me, and you can get my email, actually email on the website, richard.lang@ttuhsc.edu. And I'd be happy to make sure that those arrangements are done.
And Lang is spelled L-A-N-G-E.
Correct. Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you again for being on the show with us today. And to our listening audience, thank you for spending your afternoon with us this beautiful Saturday, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.